If you're not a vegetarian yourself, chances are you know someone who is. But vegetarian seems to mean different things to different people. Are eggs allowed? Milk? Some people who call themselves vegetarians eat fish and chicken. And what about a vegan diet? It's a lot more restricted, but in what ways? Are either of them healthier than the traditional American diet? Well, today on Please Explain, we're going to talk about the long history of vegetarian and vegan eating in this country and around the world. And joining us are Andrew Smith, the food historian and editor of the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America. He's also written or edited many books about the history of food. Welcome back to our show. Amanda Cohen is a chef and the owner of Dirt Candy, a vegetarian restaurant in New York City. And Rin Berry is the historical advisor to the North American Vegetarian Society and author of, among other books, The New Vegetarians and The Vegan Guide to New York City. And we invite our listeners to join in the conversation. You give us a call at 212-433-9692 or write us on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also join in on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So with these Please Explain segments, we often begin at the beginning with definitions. Andy, can we start with the word vegetarian? By definition, what do true vegetarians eat and what can't they eat?
Well, vegetarian is a broad term that means people who essentially do not eat meat, poultry, or fish. They may eat eggs. They may eat dairy products. They may eat milk. So, and they may consume honey. But then there are special groups within that. Lacto-vegetarians will eat dairy. Ovo-vegetarians will eat eggs but not dairy. And then vegans will eat no animal product at all, although there are some exceptions that some vegans do eat certain products. So.
Now, Amanda, because it is more restrictive, is there more of a challenge to cook for a vegan diet?
Yes, definitely. It definitely spurs on a lot of creativity, but you are letting go of a lot of ingredients that you would normally use, although we choose to look at it more as having all these other ingredients we can use versus what we don't have.
Well, as a chef, what's the most difficult ingredient to do without?
Eggs, 100%.
Not chicken stock.
Not chicken stock. Chicken stock, I've got that covered with great vegetable stock, but eggs really are sort of an amazing creation, and they do a lot of amazing things in baking and food, and so it is hard to find a replacement.
Now, Rin, in practical terms, is an ethical vegetarian different from other kinds of vegetarians in terms of what they allow themselves to consume?
Well, ethical vegetarian is almost synonymous with vegan, because vegans are guided by their ethical compass not to, to forego anything made of animal products or anything, to eat anything that is derived from animal sources.
Aren't there people who go even further? Is the term fruitarian, where
right.
they will only eat things that you can pick off of a tree or a bush, because if you eat carrots, you're killing the plant?
That's true. They'll eat only end products. Fruit, because it ripens and casts its seed and regenerates itself. So these people prefer to eat food that is karma-free, so to speak.
Aren't humans biologically omnivores? Do we know whether any early humans chose to eat a solely vegetarian diet?
Well, according to Linnaeus, the great 18th century taxonomist, we should be classified among the primates who are predominantly frugivores.
Well, we later learned from Jane Goodall that primates eat meat, but for a long time we thought they didn't. Chimpanzees and apes didn't, but they do.
But the pygmy chimpanzee is actually the ape with whom we share most of our DNA, the bonobo. Mm-hmm. And they are quite...
They also have a lot of sex, but...
That's one of the side benefits of being a frugivore.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Yeah.
Andy, when were the first societies or groups of vegetarians who made deliberate decisions not to consume meat? When did that start?
You could actually go back to the first time that humans settled down into communities. Historically, all of the early archaeological evidence suggests that people were omnivores, and it's only when the game disappeared from places where they were that they settled down into communities and began to raise large parts of grains and other things. So in many ways, they became vegetarian, not by choice, but particularly that is what they had available for them. There are certain countries, like in India, for instance, where you have religious groups like Hindus and later Buddhists and Jains, for instance, that did certainly build that into their religious philosophies. So you have this traditions going back at least 2,500 years.
Well, in the religious context, again, these are ethical vegetarians, aren't they? They've decided they don't want to kill any animals.
Yes.
You're nodding your head, Vryn.
Yes, they are. Well, they are ethical, but they're not always vegan. Like the Hindus consume dairy products, so they would be classified as lacto-vegetarians.
And some Hindus consume lamb. So you have a diversity of views, yeah, even within religious groups, and some Buddhists are vegetarian and some aren't, yeah, and so it's more complex than just identification.
That's sort of an aberration.
And what about in this country? Didn't the movement really start with people like Sylvester Graham and John Harvey Kellogg, the people who gave us graham crackers and Kellogg cereals?
Well, there were certainly vegetarians in America prior to the 19th century, but it's the medical profession that comes along, as exemplified by Sylvester Graham, come along and say, if you eat meat, you're going to not live as long and you're going to have all sorts of diseases. So they really start off in this way. There are certainly religious groups that are also vegetarian-oriented. The most obvious is the Seventh-day Adventists, who will take on much of the writings of Sylvester Graham, and in large part will not require this as a part of the religion, but will certainly have that as something desirable.
Amanda, what about your restaurant, Dirt Candy? Where does it fall in the vegetarian spectrum?
Well, we call ourselves actually a vegetable restaurant, first and foremost. Then we are a vegetarian restaurant, but we will make everything vegan upon request. We make two versions of every single dish so that if you are vegan, you can certainly come in and, you know, enjoy a meal there. But we like to use eggs and cheese and butter.
Mm-hmm. Because it adds flavor.
Yes, it adds flavor. I think it opens up the world. And one of the things is that I really do want people to eat more vegetables. And it's hard for most people, if they're coming from a meat-eating diet, to go straight to veganism. And for me, I'd rather they start, you know, in steps. And it's easy to introduce them to a meal that has a little bit of cheese and egg and not meat, and they won't feel as confronted by it. They'll feel a lot more comfortable, whereas if you're like, listen, this is just a plate of vegetables, there is no meat on it, they're going to run scared.
Now, what is the objection to using cheese for the people who don't? Is it, after all, cheese comes out of milk, which is a... It's not harming the animal in any way when the milk is drawn.
Well, I mean, from an ethical viewpoint, well, you know, the cow has to be lactating, and has to be, its pregnancy is forced.
So it's an unnatural thing.
Yeah, its pregnancy is forced, and they've turned it into milking machines, and and when they're finished, as milk-yielding animals, then they're simply slaughtered for meat. So it's a remorseless process.
We're going to take calls in just a few moments. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate. I do want to address the whole matter of maintaining a healthy diet. A lot of people are concerned about that. Some people, I've heard of vegetarians who said that when they weren't feeling well, they went to the doctor and the doctor said, you're anemic and you better start eating meat. How do you deal with that at your restaurant, Amanda? How do you get around the things that we assume meat provides best?
Well, that's not my job. Uh-huh. So my job is just
to make tasty food.
Tasty food. I think that if this goes with any way that you eat, you have to eat a complete diet. You have to eat healthy. You can be vegan, vegetarian, or an omnivore. It doesn't mean you're going to eat healthy. And so that's really the person's...
Fast food is not as good for you as something you're going to eat at a really good steakhouse.
It's just not. But we try to make tasty meals, and we try to add in as many different nutrients and vegetables as possible to make it taste good. But your health is unfortunately not my concern.
Well, what about you, Rin? This is something I'm sure you hear a lot about.
Right. Well, it's
is it all vitamin pills that get us past problems?
No, actually, it's quite feasible to have a very nourishing vegan diet. I mean, vegans and vegetarians in the Framingham studies, for example, have routinely outlive non-vegetarians. And certainly the great athletic champions of today in the endurance sports are all vegan. People like Scott Jurix, who holds the records in the ultra marathon, and triathletes like David Scott all compete as vegans.
What's your response? I'll ask Amanda this as well, to people who think that vegetarian food is bland and boring.
Well, I invite them to visit Amanda's restaurant to refute that. But, you know, I put out a vegan guide, and there are 137 vegan and vegetarian restaurants.
In almost every culture there in Chinatown has a few.
That's right. Out. Every ethnic group contributes a very delicious vegan cuisine.
And, of course, Indian food often is, although many of the Indian restaurants in New York serve meat. I guess it's because they
want to survive.
Well, there's a whole row in Little India of vegetarian restaurants, like Bhojan and Madras Mahal and Pungal and Sabanas Bhavan.
Can I comment on that, too? Historically, that was absolutely true. In my opinion, vegetarian and vegan food really was tasteless. But since subsequently, it's really gotten good, so that there are really good vegetarian foods that I love to eat, even though I'm not a vegetarian or a vegan.
So vegetarians had to figure out how to do that?
Yes.
Because they didn't want to be bored?
Well, I think, yes. I think just to sort of add on, and just to go back a little into the history of how this was, when you had the medical movement, it was all about sort of making your body healthy. And when you had the ethical movement, it was about, you know, how to treat animals right. And when you had sort of, I think, in the 1960s, when you had the planet movement, it was all about treating the planet right. And within all that, none of it was about the food. And that lasted for a good 100 years. And it really wasn't until the 2000s where people, sort of just regular eaters, decided to change their diet. And they're like, you know, I want to eat a little bit less meat. How do I make it interesting? And that's where you have this sort of influx of vegetarian restaurants and mainstream restaurants that are now treating vegetarian diners with a lot more respect and adding a lot more flavor into the food.
And then there are people like Mark Bittman, who says he's a vegetarian before 6 o'clock. But that still means that he wants to eat really vegetarian food. And I suspect a lot of our listeners are curious about this as well, especially the ones who aren't vegetarians but are interested in finding out more. Liz from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having this. It's so interesting.
Well, what do you want to talk about? What's your question?
Thank you. Yeah, I've been vegan for about over a year now. And my question is, what are some good go-to vegan recipes that will be exciting for vegans, vegetarians, and omnivores alike?
So when guests come to your home, you can serve food that everybody's going to enjoy, and they won't say, oh, gee, going to a vegan's house is going to be a lousy meal. Amanda?
Well, I think you have to look a lot in other ethnicities. I think if you go to, like, an Indian cookbook or even an Italian cookbook where you just sort of leave out the meat and the cheese, it's really easy to make a tasty meal. Or you can go to my cookbook where we have a lot of vegan recipes in it. But really, go to other ethnicities. American cookbooks centered on, like, American food, they're not going to be that easy to make. You're not going to find a lot of great vegan recipes. But go to, like, Mexican cuisine, buy Mexican cookbooks. There are amazing vegan recipes in there. And all you really have to do is just, you know, leave out the dairy. It's about as easy as it can get.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I just wanted to address it because my tastes have changed. So things that I find delicious now, I wouldn't have found delicious before. And I can't relate anymore.
Well, Rin, I have seen a lot of vegetarian and vegan cookbooks recently. They come into our office pretty much every day. So something has happened.
Yeah.
10 years ago, they were a rarity. Maybe the, what was it, Moosewood or something like that? There were just a couple.
Right. So you can go into any bookstore and find whole shelves dedicated to vegan and vegetarian cuisine.
But Amanda, which one is yours so that we can recommend that one?
Mine's the Dirt Candy Cookbook.
Let's take another call. Steve from Amerenik. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I am calling to get your guests' input on a subject which I have discussed with several vegans that I have known about whether or not honey is vegan. I already hear them chuckling, and they know where I'm going. I say it's made from plant products. It's made by animals, but so is all food. I mean, the bees pollinate all the produce we eat, too. So they're working on that. What's going on there?
We were discussing this before the show. So, Ren, yeah, you can give the party line, and then the rest of us will chime in.
Well, if you're a consistent vegan, a high-church vegan, you will forego honey because it's the work product of the bee. So therefore, it's unethical to be taking it from the bee because you're depriving the next generation of its nourishment. And bees are invariably killed in the process of harvesting their honey. They use smoke. They use lots of. They drown them and anything to get their honey. So, from that standpoint, it's verboten for vegans to eat honey.
That's the general view, but there are large numbers of vegans who do eat honey and don't consider that to be the same thing as eating dairy or eating eggs or anything like that. So,
well then they're not really
they're not true blue vegans.
Yeah,
I think like with any diet, there's a scale. And so you have some vegans who will, some vegans who won't. I mean, there's an argument to be made about wine. Is wine vegan? Is wine not vegan? And
what do you say?
I say, well, I'm not vegan, so it doesn't really matter to me. But I think if you're, as Rin would say, a high church vegan, you have to be very careful about what wine you drink.
Why?
Yeah. Because now they use animal ingredients in the fining process. They use isinglass and...
But not everyone does.
No, there are many.
The unfiltered wines.
Sure, there are many wine products that are vegan. So,
so you have to look for one that says unfiltered.
Yeah, you have to read the labels.
My guests are Rin Barry, historical advisor to the North American Vegetarian Society, Andrew Smith, who's a food historian, editor of the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America, Amanda Cohn, who's the chef and owner of Dirt Candy. We're talking about vegetarianism and veganism on today's Please Explain. And let's take another call. Our number, by the way, is 212-433-9692. You can also reach us on our show page at WNYC.org. Jordan from Westchester, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
And what do you want to talk about?
I became sort of a vegetarian or vegan a little over a year ago, and the hardest part for me has been like getting the support of my friends and family. I think that people feel judged, I feel like a reverse judgment, that people think I'm judging them because I no longer eat meat. So how do you guys deal with that?
We hear this a lot from families where there is one person who's chosen to become a vegetarian, disrupts the family meal, and often is teased by siblings. But this is a personal decision. So how do people get around that? Do two meals have to be cooked every day?
Well, I mean, it's best not to be judgmental. I mean, we should have a lazy
fear. Well, I have to tell you, whenever I talk about meat, a fair number of vegetarians will write or call in and complain. So judgmental goes both ways.
Yeah, well, I think it's counterproductive to be confrontational. I think one should just set an example and have a laissez-faire attitude. And if people observe that you're thriving and healthy, and then they'll emulate you.
But let's say I am the person who cooks for the family. Am I going to have to cook two meals every time? Or should I just try to do a couple of vegetables that would be vegetarian and everybody will like anyway, and then just say to the vegetarian, okay, you don't have to eat the part that has meat?
A number of my students fall into families like that, where they're the vegetarian and the rest of the family is not. And their solution was to begin to cook themselves vegetarian food. So it isn't that the mother or whoever is doing the food preparation has to cook two meals, but it just gives people options.
Well, if we're talking about an 8-year-old, that becomes a
little
harder.
Difficult.
Yeah. And often that decision to become a vegetarian is pretty young. Can be made by somebody who's pretty young.
Well, I was 19 when I became a vegetarian.
Well, you old enough to cook for yourself, weren't you?
Yeah. But they're getting younger and younger.
I think it also, you have to be careful how you say it. I think most people actually eat a lot of vegetarian meals and they don't even realize it. So the more that you're, unlike Rin, I would say the less confrontational you are about it and the more sort of, you know, you just let it happen, I think you'll find that there's a lot more you can eat. You know, if you go out to dinner, instead of saying, I can't have that, you just sort of find what you can have and it doesn't become as big a deal.
Well, what happens when a vegetarian goes to a regular restaurant? Can they be assured that if they only order the vegetables, that the vegetables weren't cooked with chicken stock?
No.
Yeah, that's right. And you have to, you know, I often say it's impossible to have a vegan meal in a non-vegetarian restaurant because biochemically it's impossible. The food particles migrate.
This is almost like eating kosher food.
Right. And,
even if you eat things that are perfectly kosher, if they're cooked, if they're cut with the wrong knife, on the wrong plate,
exactly.
They're not kosher anymore.
Yeah, that's very true.
Amber from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, good afternoon. How are you all doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I'm a lifelong vegetarian. My mother was vegetarian before I was born, so ever since I was in the womb, I have not had any meat, fish, or anything. Just the other day, I had a very disturbing conversation with a longtime friend of mine who said that it is impossible for poor people to be vegetarian, that to be vegetarian or vegan, you need to have a certain socioeconomic status, and that you cannot be vegetarian while living on food stamps. And I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York. I just really want to ask you guys about, like, accessibility of vegetarianism for people who are on food stamps or have really low, really limited resources, and what you all think about that possibility.
Especially if you also want to eat organic vegetables.
Well, I would
they
say,
are more expensive.
I would say on the contrary, that that's really the poor people in the world who constitute the largest group of vegetarians on the planet. In third world countries, animal flesh is a luxury food. Animal products are a luxury food.
I've been told by people from who come from other countries that they can always tell whether the chef who's cooking their food is somebody who's just come over from China or wherever, or has been here a long time, by the amount of meat in the dish. A little amount of meat as a flavoring,
right,
is
exactly.
Much more likely to be in the authentic cuisine. And Americans, I guess, and we're seeing changes all throughout the world as people have more money. China suddenly, there is going to be more meat in your food than there was 20 years ago. It's seen as a sign of
it's a status symbol.
Of status.
Absolutely. I think the food stamps and welfare, I mean, that's a whole other discussion of healthy eating that it's too hard to answer within the sort of confines of vegetarianism.
But there's been a lot of suggestions with food stamps, for instance, to lower the cost of fruit and vegetables,
right,
in terms of food stamps recipients and increase the price of junk food. So there's lots of different suggestions that have been made.
Alana in Brooklyn writes, I tried to eat vegetarian a couple of years ago and found out the hard way that I'm allergic to soy and almonds. Soy seems to be a staple in the vegetarian diet. Is there anything that I can substitute?
For a protein, you can use any kind of bean, and you can actually make a kinds of tofu out of beans. So you could certainly use that. You can use lots of other nuts if you're just allergic to almonds. You can use coconut. All of that will be a great replacement.
Another listener, Rosemary from Queens, writes that she is a third-generation Italian-American who uses more vegetables than her mother. She's not a vegetarian, but she only eats meat a couple of times a week. That if people go back to things their ancestors ate when they were too poor to eat meat, they can wind up with some pretty good food.
Yes, absolutely.
Historically, for me, a meal in the 50s or 60s, if it did not have meat in it, there was something, the family had some problems financially. So a lot of us grew up in that environment. And I think now as vegetarian food and vegan food taste better today, and as you know, I can eat a vegetarian vegan meal and be perfectly satisfied, whereas you would not have been able to do that 40 years ago or 50 years ago.
Now, Rin, some people refuse to give their pets meat, but the pets aren't making that choice themselves. Is that good?
Well, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, they didn't have the choice to be pets either.
But I mean, shouldn't they be eating meat? After all, that's their natural diet.
We're really not certain that this dog food, that, you know, which contains slaughterhouse scraps, is the most nutritious food, and that's really forced on them as well.
Well, when a cat goes roaming for food, it catches mice and birds. It doesn't spend a lot of time eating tomatoes and lettuce.
Well, that's true, but you know, dogs readily take to a vegetarian diet. I'm not recommending it. But I'm saying dogs can be happily converted. They seem to love the vegetable dishes that are cooked for them. I've had friends who've converted their cats to a vegan diet with additional supplements, of course.
Jenna from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, fascinating conversation. I just wanted to add that I'm a mother of 14-month-old twins, and my husband and I are pescatarians for the most part, but we are raising our daughters, you know, mostly on a vegetarian diet with an occasional, you know, smattering of fish. And I was just curious to know if you had any input on vitamin B12. That's really my primary concern. I've been told by relatives who are a bit skeptical that if an individual does not consume meat at a young age, they will not later in life have the ability to digest and metabolize, I suppose, vitamin B12 properly. Is there any merit to that? I'm so busy, obviously, I just haven't had a chance to do the research myself.
Who wants to answer that?
Well, there are lots of cultures around the world where they don't eat meat, and obviously they're thriving, I think, if you just look towards India. So I don't think that would be a big concern.
But you can easily get vitamin B12 if that is an issue and a medical professional tells you that that's a problem with growing children, which I would be concerned about, at least to get help and get advice from. You can easily get supplements that will solve that problem.
Well, probably one of the most challenging things is substituting something for another. How do you make a cake without eggs, for example?
Yeah. There's lots of different products you can use. We use flaxseed at the restaurant. We use potato starch. You just need something that really, you have to usually add a little bit of a different kind of a leavener, so more baking powder, more baking soda, and then you need to use something else as a binder. So that's why we use something like flaxseeds, which are ground up and added to the batter, and it really sort of holds it together.
And it tastes just as good?
It tastes different. You know what? We're not going to make something that tastes exactly the same. That's an impossibility, and you can't look for that. Well, you can look for something that is equally delicious but different.
There was a time when there were restaurants, especially kosher restaurants, where you would have all these you'd have vegetarian meals, but they would all be made in an attempt to taste like meat. So you'd have vegetarian steak, which was made with mushrooms and things like that. And we're not seeing that anymore.
Well, you do still. I mean, that's a huge tradition in the Chinese temple cuisine where you see a lot of mock meat. But no, right now I think the focus in the entire food world is sort of more on farmers markets and fresh food and not as much processed food. And all that tended to be a lot more processed. So we are seeing more of a focus on
And it never really tasted like what it was supposed to taste like anyway.
But it looked like it.
And I think mock meats are really transitional foods and They help people to wean themselves off of a flesh diet. I mean, they've even in ancient China they used tofu, where it actually started. You know, making mock meats to lure people into the vegan lifestyle.
We have gotten lots of calls. Unfortunately, we can't get to them. One person describes the process of going vegetarian one meal a day at a time. In other words, kind of weaning himself off of meat. How did you go vegetarian, Ren?
Well, I took the plunge, actually, and I did it all at once.
You went cold turkey,
you know,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, cold although you can't eat turkey.
Cold tofurkey, shall we
say. Cold tofurkey. Well, I like that. Okay, well, thank you all so much for being on our show for this conversation about vegetarianism and veganism. I don't know whether we've converted anybody in our audience, but I think that we probably cleared up some mysteries. My great thanks to Rin Barry, who's historical advisor to North American Vegetarian Society, author of, among other books, The New Vegetarians, the Vegan Guide to New York City, Amanda Cohn, chef and owner of Dirt Candy, and the which is a vegetarian restaurant. She's the author of the Dirt Candy Cookbook. And Andrew Smith, a food historian, editor of the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America. It's been a real pleasure having you on our show today. Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure being on.